plus.
En, to, tre. Kvart over fire.
Ja, godt dere kom.
Hallo!
Det ble så veldig fin forelesning her nå.
Det ble det.
Yay!
More people!
Vi ser. Og det på.
Ja.
Okay. Good morning and welcome back to IMT 4116 and workshop 2. Happy to have Nosot and Kato back. And we'll go a little bit through what happened last time in workshop 1, I understand, and look at some new stuff. We'll take it as it comes. So enjoy.
Hello. I wonder how close I need to be to this thing. Hello. Yeah, rather close. Yep, I'm going to put this closer to myself.
Are you going to move that over?
Here. Yeah, let's see. That should work. Yep. That's cool. Alright, let's see. We have four people in the classroom. That's good. See.
We have one student online. And he says that the sound is good.
Sound is good. Yeah, that's good. It weren't good last time. Did you get to fix the stuttering, or did the entire video become stuttery?
I think last time the recording was not good. So.
Alright. So I'm just...
Vocal quality this time.
Alright. So just going to quickly go over the previous slide just to refresh the memory. Let's see. Not that... Workshop 1, workshop 2 is not bad. I'm going to open to see what I made here, because I'm probably going to do this more real time this time instead of having slides. So we're going to go walk through it. So it started with the Safazi dealer's choice, blah blah, fictive case, the type of indicators you should always try to look for, the crypto algorithms, look for these traits. We had the file, a doc file, which was an RTF file, which was renamed because of the parser in Office allows you to do a lot of things. It really doesn't care if you do a lot of errors, and that causes some parsing problems sometimes. We extracted the malware from the file, showed you how to do it both dynamically, and showed you the tools, the SVF tools, and we extracted the main part of the shellcode. We opened the shellcode. Did anybody look at the shellcode here? Probably not, but it's one of the fun things to do. I recommend everybody to do it. It's not that difficult because you can do it manually. You don't need a hex race for analyzing shellcode, which is one of the nice things about that shellcodes, because they're usually very small. So I recommend to do that if you got the time or whatever, because the easiest way on this one is basically open the debugger, run it, see where it stops, then put a breakpoint at the instruction just before they stop, and then rerun it again and write a script to read the registers and drop, save it out of our file. We did that last time. If anybody's interested, I can do that later on today as well if you want to see that again. We created the mset file, which from the shellcode, because that's the easiest way of launching it. Otherwise, you have to use the box debugger. But right, so here's the script you could put on the location to write it out. And we have this task, workshop task, of going through the resulting dropper file. So what I have here then is Yepsy Pepsi. I just call it that. Should probably call it yepsypepsi.dll. Here is the extracted file that this one has dropped. It's kind of nice. So I expect that everybody got to extract this file. And yeah, did you do it statically or did you do it the dynamic way? Basically the malware run itself and you extracted it from the app.data folder. Yeah.
From the reports, I think most people did it dynamically.
All right. That's good to know. So we will try to find that today, the static way. We're going to try to use both the Hexerase decompiler and the assembly view. The problem with just using the assembly view is that you have so many instructions for so little code, so it's very difficult to work with. It is mostly used to make sure that you understand or make sure that the decompiler doesn't do anything wrong or hasn't left out something for you. So we're gonna copy this file into a fresh, I'm gonna just copy that into here now because not a new folder, just copy that there, don't need to see that. Just gonna run it the dynamic way first. So not DC, blah blah blah, not the bulletin, yeah, there's the bulletin, snapshot, blah blah blah. Alright. Office 2017, virtual network. So again, I'm using a Mac as host and a Windows as guest, because using a different host than the guest would in most cases protect you if you have malware that escapes from the guest environment. Doesn't always do that, but you have malware that works on both Linux, Mac and Windows at the same time, such as Python malware and the likes of that. I don't know if O2IT does so, but potentially yes. Right, so we have the dropper here. Let's just call it it.dll this time. It's a bit easier. We could always just check. Always check if there's some information that is interesting. P size on the it.dll is smaller than the file size. So if you remember the way we did the shellcode extraction, we just basically put a custom breakpoint where we saved the contents of the ECX register into this file. So probably that routine runs until it crashes or meets some kind of tag. There is a tag in that code. I think it's CACC as a hexadecimal or something like that. But we did not care about that one, so it ran until the program crashed, so it had some extra data appended to it. This is a way of extracting files that I usually do, because I think it's the easiest way and quickest way of doing it. So instead of making everything perfect to the first time around, I just create one file like this, and I basically just go out and check the bytes. Alright, let's see. You open it in the hex editor, go to, right, this is not the best hex editor because it's very huge like this. Let's see, it's not hex, it's decimal, and we go to here. Right, so if you look at the code, I don't have the shellcode here right now, you would see that this is the tag it looks for to end the decryption routine, but our routine didn't really care about that, it wrote these extra bytes. So what we simply do is, you see the PU file size from the CFF Explorer smaller, so you basically delete some of them like this. So this is the way, I think it's the easiest way of just making sure and having the right file. So the contents of the file or the logic, nothing will be changed by doing this, but the MD5 of the file will be changed. What could have been deleted now could have been, for instance, a overlay that is used by the malware, but in this case I've not seen that overlay being used, so I just cut it out. Right. So I always like to just quickly before you can see it fine there. Quickly before I run it dynamically, I always look at some static traits. Yes. It helps to have a few knobs to hang your knowledge onto. Let's see, we go through it, see if there's anything interesting. Half one you don't see too often. This is the K32 one, is specific for, I don't remember if this is for the Windows versions after Windows XP, but you have two functions. You have one that, well, you can ignore the EXV, because the EX is just the extended, so newer versions. The W is just making sure it's wide character instead of just ASCII, that's input. The get module file name has both the K32 and an API name get module file name, and they are used on different malware that is going to attack Windows XP or earlier or after than that. Other than that, which means it could have some specific behavior based on the Windows version. Is debugger present? This one is interesting to know it has. We could go look for that when we look into the file to see if it's gonna crash or set a flag or do anything when we debug it. Write console, that one is pretty unique, don't see that all the time. Let's see, we have these. Right. It's not often you see these as a wide character string in normal files, at least not in normal malware. Right, so not that interesting. You don't know C2 domain or nothing like that. So that's good. Right. Let's just say it has one export. These are the things that you should perhaps consider writing down, so you can write it into a report, having how many exports this file has. It's very uncommon for a DLL to only have one export. It's a weird thing to do. Alright, so DLL main dispatch, DLL main, these should be pretty easy to follow in the hex view as well. DLL main. So, very small code here. So we see the FT reason, that is something that is interesting to see. We Google that one, DLL entry point. The FT reason equals one basically tells you the state of which the DLL currently is in, or is it loaded as a process or has it been unloaded, etc. So it says here on the site what it means. Has it been unloaded from the virtual address space? Is loaded into the virtual address space? Blah, blah, blah. So this one basically is the DLL loaded, run this one. So this is the main function. A lot of the times you see a different code here. Sometimes you have extra code if this is zero, so you have unloading routines and whatnot. Going into the hex race. It's not very pretty, but it's doable. We have to identify several things. And this one, it's particularly easy if you go into hex race and hide these, because you don't need the casts at all times. They can be useful. In the hex race, you kind of have to identify the structures a little bit more carefully. So we have the call here, which we have a push, we have a push here, we have an ECA, EPCA, blah blah blah, offset burst, so move ECX. So this appears to be probably some sort of this call. If we go into the hex race again, you can see that the hex race also think that this is a this call. And we can see that this is an XOR routine. The modular here is pretty standard. Basically, one of the cool things about the modular is writing code like this. But then you can, if you have a key, let's see, a key equals fish bones, which is 9 letters, you can basically just, this is just pseudocode for in range blah blah blah. Let's see, the range is 100 and you want to use fish bones as a key. You could basically, and you have some text like text equals la 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 blah blah blah. You simply use the modulo for things like this, text I equals text I XOR with key modulo len of key. So this, what it does is simply when you hit 9, it will start again over. So when you get this one, it's XORed with F I S H B O N E S, and then again fish bones over and over until it ends. It's a very simple XOR routine. It's widely used, so that is something you can look for in malware. You will pretty often find it. All right.
Are you able to show how that looks in assembly, since they don't have the X-ray?
Yeah, it will be. Let's see. So we have the function here. It can look pretty much, it can look differently in assembly, because the compilers that they use. Why is there no power in this one? Right. The compilers they use can make different assembly based on, some of them have intrinsic functions, some of them have different sorts of way of optimizing the code. But if we go here, we should see that we have some sort of variable at ESI plus 8 being pushed into EDX. EDX is 0. EAX, I mean, and we have EDX 0 here. So we put that value into AL. We XOR some variable with that value. And apparently we do the same with the next one here. We move that into a new space or the previous space. We overwrite data and we decrement the counter. So you see the EDI here is the counter of the current position in the string being decoded. So it's not very pretty here, but you will.
So it if you don't have X-ray, you look for X-ray and try to understand that.
Yeah.
If you're going to do this every day, then you buy.
Yeah. So basically, if you're going to do this every day, buy X-rays. If you do not have it, look for XOR. XOR is their way of quickly setting registers to zeros as well. So this line is basically just setting EDX to zero the most efficient way possible, just by using 2 bytes. When we are looking for crypto loops, I know he wants you to easily be able to detect crypto loops or at least finding them. You always go to, even though you have hex rays, this is one of my ways of doing it. If you go to the assembly view, you basically just search for the string XOR, or you can search for the mnemonic XOR. I usually like to do the string. You will get all of the occurrences. This I get because I search for the string and not the mnemonic, but I ignore them. We can see a lot of the string. This setting EAX to zero, setting ECX to zero, ECR. This one, here you go. There you have one XOR that actually do something. Let's see. It's basic simple XOR as well. Pretty short, so this is probably a key. You can see that here as well. Let's see. Yep. So this one, probably a key being added to CL. EBX is the position in the key, so the modulo organ, or where the position of the string at that current time. You can probably see that here as a while or for loop. Yeah. So there we found one of the XOR routines. You can look further down. EBX, EBX, all the same. XORs, so this apparently have some optimization in it. Here we go. XOR AL ECX plus EDI minus 1. Here we see the routine, which is this one. So we found the other XOR routine. Here we have one as well. XOR with the contents of the ECX address. Here, let's see. Alright, so it's the bottom line of that one. It wasn't the same one. Yeah. So when at an exam or at a assignment or at any time you want to find some crypto loop or crypto function or anything cryptographic, you can, that is at least written customly, you can just search for XOR this way and then look through the occurrence of it. Very simple way. So what I'm gonna do here then is we identify this these functions as a discall. We have to find out what this call is. So if it's going to be put into ECX, we have to EBX, I mean, we have to check the size of the structure that is put into this call. This is the most important part of the initial analysis and can take quite some time of malware. Because you should always, well, I always start with, and you probably should always start with, trying to look at or find all the structures and defining them so you can create your pretty code, because a lot of times you will have only virtual pointers to functions, to API functions, and they are usually just put into different structures. So to see what actually happens, see the calls, you have to structure it up. So in this one, we will do it here first. We'll see the EBX goes up to 0C at least. So we can expect the EBX to be at least a D word here, D word here, D word here, and a D word here. Right, so C created by pressing the insert button under the structures tab of IDA. Let's call it, we didn't know what it is yet, we can rename it at some later point. So let's be lazy, call it struct1. Create D words. So If you want to do this the simple way, you can create one D-word, press star on the numpad, write, for instance, 0xc divided by 4, because you want that many elements. It's not this size, but it's size in elements, as you see here. You turn off the dub construct and create this array, go like that, and bam, you have created several of the same type. So if that one were to be a byte, I would have created as many bytes as 0c divided by 1, which is 12 bytes. Alright, so what we'll do then, we can go back here. We have the EBX, it's pointing to this area, so we will have to defining that struct up. If you do that here as well, this is why you have to have the hex race, because it makes things pretty. Right, so we're actually missing one. So it's 16 in size, it's 10u, not c. So as you see, it starts at 0, goes to 4, goes to 8, and then to c, and that is a d word, takes 4 spaces, so c plus 4 equals 10, so it needs another one. Here we go. If you look at that in the hex race, you can see the beauty of hex race now. You see we have one variable pointed by this structure, which is this, one which is this, one which is this, and one which is this. At this point we wouldn't know what these are, but you could make an educated guess that this might be a data segment that needs to be handled, and this is some sort of key. Especially if you see keys like 11 in size or 13 in size, keys tend to be around 10 plus minus a few bytes. So we should rename these things to, let's see now, maybe key, maybe key length, maybe data, maybe data length. So these are educated guesses at this point. You will see these names appear here. If these were to be function pointers, you could go into here, press the Y button on them, declare them as function pointers. So let's say that this had been the get module file handle, or get module. Whatever, let's just get module. So this is not part of this one, but it's a good thing to know. So if this were, I can show you an example afterwards because it's kind of interesting. If this were a function pointer, you would go to this part, you would declare it as one, you would remove that one, press the parentheses here. Pretty important to have the parentheses like this, so this is something you should write down, because this is something you will not easily read on the internet. Let's see, this is a standard call, so you encompass this in a parenthesis, two underscores, the prototype, for instance, std call is nice to start with. You will, in some cases it might not be that, but this one is fine, and you will have to remove the in opt blah blah blah. So if you did like this, I can do it here now. Bam, now is this an offset. So if this were a pointer, it would not look like this. It would have arguments, so you can right click on it and click force call type, and then it will reanalyze the stack, and you would probably end up with seeing more code and more function calls or API calls in your malware. At the current time, we just move that back to an end. So you will not see the pretty offset's name here, which is kind of sad, but this is why the hex race is such of importance. Now we have several calls to the same one after this. Right, so int I sub. See this one call, it's this call. Blah blah blah, compare to see if it exists, blah blah blah, standard start of function. Right, so we're gonna structure this up again. So, alright, so this stupid of me, I pressed the 2 to be that struct, but it weren't. This is the structure we defined previously. So we can see here that it pushed into the EBX. We have this call, so the EBX is the only argument to this function. As you can see here, you could do that here as well, setting the structure to this, so we put this to the structure we created. It doesn't really help much in this mode, so you have to do it manually in your head or on paper, which is kind of silly. But if you look at the hex phrase, this would make a lot more sense, because you will have like, alright, if this is not data, we'll see that here as well, if there is no data, blah blah blah, jump to exit code, set it to 0 and return very quickly. Otherwise, read the length into v2, so data length probably, new operator, data length plus 2, blah blah blah, if it's still nothing, return. We have a for loop for the length we had n, so we know that it's length at this point. Maybe data is put into a variable, so we call it data this time. You can see that in this new area that has been created or allocated, we will get the result of a byte in the data as point I, XORed with the same point I minus 1, so the previous byte, as you can see here. So this is the integer, the counter, so it XORs the previous byte and it XORs the current byte with the v1 key with the key length as a modulo. So that's kind of interesting. So this can look quite different in all of them, but essentially just the same thing. It takes the key and iterates it, just as I showed you over Notepad. So what we would do then is go here, call this mv, always prepend, when you rename function, always prepend it with some sort of prefix. This will help you identify which code you think is written by the threat actor and is not a library that has been imported or an API function or anything like that. And you can easily sort by the prefix in the function name window. So this one we call, for instance, XOR or decoder. Let's call it decoder. It's MV decoder. So that's pretty interesting. So we know now that at this point we have some data, and at this point we have a key. So while this key is represented as a string, it's pretty silly. Let's not have that represented as a string because it's hexadecimal. So what we could do is, of course, we could take this data out, and we can do that at least once now, just to have shown you. Do that manually yourself. Let's see, we take the key, Python a key equals, let's see, 0x. So if my, oh, it's not always easy to find them. C0, let's just copy. x0x33 0xdd8f. Just stop me at any time if you want to ask a question or have any comment. I will answer them, so no problem there. BD. Alright, no questions from the online users at this point. B PD0X. This is the manual lazy way of doing it, which is, personally, I do find it preferable if I'm telling people or teaching people how to do it while doing it manually. D8 and 0x91. So there we have created a key. All of this is too long for the manual way, so let's see if we can do it this way. Copy. I should have done it in Notepad by default, but. What I'm going to do is pretty cool with Notepad++. If you hold in the Alt button, you can just select an area like this and delete like that. Just remove all of these. This is basically just to show you you could do it manually as well as running it dynamically. But I think it's important, having shown that 0x, let's see, 0x, put a comma there. Do like that, data equals, blah blah blah, and let's see, I think it's Control J. What do we have it down here? Data equals, blah blah blah, so we have both of them in now. So we could look at the function again. So we have, at some point, we have if I is smaller or equal than -1, break. I is data length, so it starts from the back of the function and counts down. Probably see that here as well. Move EDI ESS4. Right, so this is part of. This is why it's so difficult working with structures in hex rays. No, not in hex rays, but in assembly, because you have to basically remember what is being pushed into the different registers and seeing the structures here. So, but we will write it anyway. Let's see. So we will take a for loop for I in range 0 to length of. Length of data to 0 -1. Right, so what it did here was it took the. Yeah, we should probably create a new array first. Let's see. So we have B equals, yes, put, make it the same. Here we see, now we have two arrays of the same size. So for I in range, 0 length of data to 0 -1, blah blah blah, B I equals data I XR with data data I -1 XR with key modulo modulo of the length of the key can key. Alright, so that should be fine, shouldn't it? List index out of range. Alright, so what happened wrong there? probably fine by heart. This is why I should flatten this here in the first place. I never remember how Python works when you do the ranges in backwards direction. I always tend to make them do the wrong things. What we could probably do is just make a string. We don't know at this point if this is a string or if the resulting data is going to be some binary that is going to be used in use this instruction or not, but let's try to just make it a string, see what happens. So we take the length data minus one. Of course we forgot a minus one in the previous one here. So let's do the equals b plus character of data I XOR with data I minus 1 XOR with key I modulo len key. So this way we basically take the key and make it turn around like the other one. Let's print B here. Paste. Let's see. Print B. Why am I not allowed to print B? Yeah, it's probably the demo effect, but it's kind of weird. Let's just save it as a file. bg.py. Come on. Which is the key? There we go. To the desktop. That's probably the reason, because it's this noob here. Python VG Py. So that one looks weird, doesn't it? It's not like something we would expect to see. So we can run it dynamically and see what we expect to see, to see what we have done wrong. So if we take this one at this point, go here, run the thing. I like to do that always on process entry because I like to see where it starts. This is options. So I suspect everybody knew how to do this since you already ran it dynamically, or you probably did it in. Let's just write something useless here. Let's try and not write something. So if you're going to run a DLL dynamically in IDA, you always have to, the application has to be run DLL32, even for 62-bit applications. The input file is the DLL file. It's important that it's called DLL. If it's not called .dll, it sometimes creates some weird occurrences that it crashes or doesn't even load or something like that. The parameters needs to be the name of the file itself, because this is parameter null. And you write the comma and argument if you have a different export that you want to run. In some versions of IDA, I don't know if this one, but at least the previous version, you had to have a space before the first comma here, or it would take the comma as part of the first argument, and then the second one would be invalid. But anyway, let's go there to see if it starts and stops, or what happens. Oh, I see it crash, it doesn't loop. It doesn't really do good. But just put an argument on, see if it runs. Runs fine. Alright, let's keep that argument and go in here. Let's see, it probably goes in here. Probably goes in here. Let's put, can do it in here as well. Yeah. So it ran down here. Then we don't need that one. Can run through this one. We see we have run this one at some point. This one is probably still encoded because it wrote it to a different to a different array. As we remember here, it's created the new array so that the win10 here is probably a con. No, it's good. It's a char star. Could be a vchar, but it starts with an nested list. So if we at this point press Control 2, you open this list, you press locals, you can see it doesn't matter if you're in hex race or in the assembly view here. Or does it? No. Not really sure. Yeah, you can see it anyway. So we have the V10 variable. You can jump to it, look at it, see what it says. Doesn't say much. I don't see the S here. Do you see the S? Which is weird. X-ray. There we go. Now I see it. So this is not an... So we said that this was a character. It's not a character. It's a V character. So it's probably VChar. For some reason you have to use capital letters. Now you can see that it shows up as an L and system root sys1264. So that is what we were expecting to see from the decoding part. We should change it to make sure that works. As you can see, can't move the mouse though. The L, which is in front of the string, means that this is a void character. Alright, we could take a small break now. No problem, I can fix this during the break. Yep. Yep. Hello, hello. All right. That's cool. All right. So we had some problem with the script, but turns out that I copied the wrong data. So we exited the wrong data with the wrong key, turning up just crap. If we look at again at this code, very standard simple code, should be pretty easy, especially in this view. I don't know if the free version has this view. I think so. This view is pretty good for the assembly view. You can see the XOR loop here for the value or the data being XORed with the integers or the position of the data with the previous byte and the current byte with the key. As we see here, and you can see at the bottom here, as we did when we searched through the XOR, we found the additional XOR here, the XOR ALECX, which basically, if you read this code or go more thoroughly through this code, you will see that it only XORs the last byte of the data with the first byte of, no, the first byte of the data with the first byte of the key at the end. The clever thing of that doing that is I had to create two loops if I didn't want to think much about it. So here we wrote a script, we copied the correct data, and it's no double assignment there, that's pretty silly. Right, so we copied, this is the key we had, we copied the correct data this time instead of the wrong data. We created our copy of it. This is a simple way of just making sure you have a array of the same size, since this one worked the opposite way from back to forth. It's not that easy to just append. You could of course create a array, append, and then reverse the array at the end, but this is very simple in the logic sense. We have the dummy string for printing out data. We remember, or we can see, actually I want to show you that print B here. We just print an empty line as well, because I like having empty lines. We have the XOR loop we saw, we have the XOR at the end, and here we just create a character for some reason. Not a string. So run it. So if you see at the B, we have apparently Unicode, the void character. Python is not very happy about void character by default, so. But every other character here is default ASCII, so just create this one to skip all the zeros and create a string out of the non-zeros. So then again, we can remove these because you've seen it. Oh, shit, as you can see. And we got the system root, system of 64 out of that. So that is what this one is, so you should probably just rename this to, this is a wildcard, or Unicode, or vstring vs underscore system root. You can't have backslashes, so just do like that, so it's well 64. Right, so this is basically what you do the entire way as far as you can possible. So this one is a key zero. You will try to rename all of the variables you find as much as you can do, because the code makes more and more sense the more you have renamed. I find it sad you do not have the hex race. It's pretty sad, because working with the data, it's not very pleasant being in this view. You can see here, we have the name, the offset name. You can still press the N here, change the name of that. Change the name, press Y to change the type, if you need to change the type of it. You can see the sizes of these structures. Apparently here it uses the EBX. Very typically it uses the ECX as a call instead. We have the same decoder, we can then just probably just take the same. So we can, yep, we should do that purely in the, let's do it only in the assembly view this time. As you can see, it pushes a new offset and a new size. So we have the size here at EBX4, and we have an offset at EBX. We know that the size here is still the 0x10 size, so these two are still same as previously, so we do have some new data here. So we're probably going to, I don't know why they jump back and forth like that, it's pretty silly. So we should just copy this and go to here. If you want to take this out, this data out, copy it out, copy. This is the last time I'm going to do this manually and show you the decoder thing. After this one, it will not be. There we go. And again, that trick is nice. It's all just holding the Alt button on the user mouse and Control J to do that. Let's see, put a space here. Get it. Be a bit, little bit clever here. All spaces turns out into comma 0.x. Replace. Equals. So here we have. Let's hopefully this is the same string as we had. BAC73 blah blah blah. It might be. Let's just do like that. See what happens. Now, see, that is a system 32 again, so this is basically the entire way of doing this. So VS, system, root, system, 32. So apparently it looks through some folder things. So the entire way of doing this would be basically going through the same thing over and over again. Could be lazy, do it like this, which you could also do here. It's the same thing, you can read the variables in assembly view. We are here, data length, decoder, let's remove that one from the code. We go down all the way, yeah, right, control F7. Right, so lazy, we didn't care to go out and check manually what this is, so just let it run. Temp. Yes, temp. These are apparently three folders that are put into different variables here. So we have the sys64, we have the system root, system 32, and we have the temp. All of these should probably be named VS as well. It's always good to have prefixes to know what kind of type they are. Even though IDA should have types, it's good to rename them as well. Let's see, go back here. Alright, so here we do have another new operator. The new operators, they always look like this. So if you see one of these, it's a new operator. You see the size being declared just in front of it. EX temp push 10. So here you see this one, it's not part of this one, but because this uses a stack variable, it's not a this call, it's a standard or CDR call prototype. The prototyping is very important. Have you had anything about prototypes yet?
Standard call and how the functions are called?
Yeah.
Yes.
Alright, so you had all of them. You had a this call, this CDR call, the standard call.
All right,
so those are very important to define correctly because they do change the way IDA analyzes the stack. So if they are wrong, you might have gotten code that is hidden, especially from the hex race view, or you would basically do not know which variable that is passed as an argument into a function.
But is that important when you go from assembly to using the X-ray, or is it because the assembly is going to show the variable put on stack or in the register?
Yeah,
anyway.
It's going to show that. That is true. It is important for the interpretation in the hex rays. So that is usually what you use the assembly view for at default, because you usually end up just staying in the hex rays at all times, and you go to the assembly view to check is this a standard call, is it a cedar call. The seeing if something is cedar call or standard call is very simple, because you see the changes of the stack, the sub or the sub EBX or something like that, EBP or whatever, after the function is called. You can see that it's cedar call because the stack has been cleaned after the function, but that is the main use of the assembly view, is defining the prototypes for the disassembler itself, the hex race decompiler. Right, so we have to create a new structure here. Let's do that. Struct 2. Now we could have renamed this one, because we know that this is a decoder structure. So struct decoder, for instance. It's typical for malwares to have several decoders, different kind of decoders. Some call the standard API functions of Windows, like running RSA or AES, they are horrible because it's more difficult writing good signatures on them, because custom crypto is very easy to write a good YARA signature on them. We're going to do that later. I will show you that at the end of this one, because it's probably the most important thing when you analyze malware, is getting the C2 or for the response team, so they can look for traffic there. If you are lucky, if you have worked a lot on it, you could probably get the traffic data, how it looks, and you can probably be lucky to decode it. It's usually the most difficult things to get out. But the C2 and the YARA are the two most important ones. So we will cover that afterwards. All right, let's create the structure here, the CU structure. You can see the size here, pushed on the stack, 0C. It's very small, so we can do that the simple way like this, creating the structure again. All right, so E0, let's do that. The reason why I'm doing this in the hex race here is that doing this in assembly takes so long, so we can't really do that in a couple of hours, or 3 hours, or whichever, really. We should probably have 3 hours for this one, to be honest. We should probably add an hour to the...
Request more recording?
Yeah, I should do that, because it's more important to go through this.
Just a comment for you, if you have made plans, because I know the lab, some of you choose to be here and some leave, then the video will be available later if you have other plans. So, since you deviate from normal setup, if you had some important things you had to do, then and I'll order more recording, no problem.
Yeah, cool.
Just, if you can just mention online that.
All right, so we will probably try to add another hour to the recording, so we will have more time to go through this, because I really, really, really want to show you a virtual pointer, and I do want to show you how to write a YARA signature, and how to, or at least what are the most important things to add into a report, because writing the report is quite important. So at some point we would probably just stop to show you those things. Alright, we just continue here. We identify the decoder, the key, the data structure and the key, and some some of the directories. We have another here, which sets up, it initializes a few variables here, 084. Right, here we have an offset. This is pretty cool. This is one of the nice things. All right. Sometimes I just do that, just press F5 and refresh it, and you will get this structure in there anyway. It points one of the fields into a offset. So this is perfect for what I want to show you. This offset has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 offsets. So here we have virtual pointers. We create a function for that. So let's call it vtable 9 dds, because dvs. Alright, double words. Alright, so 9, like that. So this one is structure. We do that again. We call it, what did you call it? We called it that, alright. Copy the name. This view is the same in the decompiler or not. We change this into a vtable. Perfect. Vtable, we can do that just like that. Bam. And we have a table of all these offsets. Now we have to define them as offsets. So let's just void style them to make sure they are pointers. We do not have the prototype at the moment, because this is the reason you have to go into assembly so often, as Ida wouldn't have any idea what kind of prototypes these functions have now, because they are just pointers in an offset. So we have here, rename this one to pointer to virtual table, and we take the name like that. Pointer to virtual table, blah blah blah. So let's hope we can see that at some point. Alright, as you can see here now, we do have them as offsets, so they are clickable. You can go in them, look at the code, see here if you want to see here. Here is the other XOR, so probably the first function in this virtual table, function table, is a decoder. Here we have something as well. Can't be sure at this point what it is. But at least here we have some clear API calls. And you can often see these in simple droppers, but in the main malwares these are usually obfuscated, so they just create a virtual table out of using the getproc address and saving them into a big structure as pointers. Or they just extract one on one while they're using it, so you can't really have them all at the same time. Right, so this one is a pointer to that structure. So we have to say, find this structure, press Y again. This one is a pointer to the vtable structure as we had. So that is the name. So now this one, as you can see, it is a vtable of 9 DWs, or some sort of vtable. Should rename that now to, so we know where it's located, virtual table, blah. That's good. We see one function that is called by this one. Let's see. Have this one here. Call blah blah blah, offset blah, into whatever is here. Go into this function. It's a this call. Alright, so obviously. So we take the type got here, this function again. It is important to do this. Let's look at this type. We don't need this view for this. We don't need to look at the threads for this one, and the loaded modules. Stucky is always nice to have. Hex view is not needed here. Alright. So, look, this is not very pretty, is it? No. It's not that ugly either, but it doesn't make much sense. As soon as we define this up, we get this is blah blah blah, field 8 is 2, so that is an integer, so we know that this is an integer. I just call it integer status at this current time, because I see it's used as an if test, so if it's set. V3 is some allocated space, so keep allocated stuff. This, the VM, it has been seen here now. We have two of them defined already. It's kind of weird because. Alright, that is stupid of me, sorry. As you see, I wrote the wrong type into here. There we go. Really, really don't want to have wrong names here. I can show you why I wrote the wrong type. I thought so much about this one that I thought this was the type of that one, but this is just one of the elements in this structure. So fixed it up to structure 2, blah blah blah. This one as well, structure 2 now. Structure 7, operate new. Alright, so we're gonna. This is basically a creation place for this one. Let's see if this one is used anywhere else, because I really want to show you the function pointers first before I show you the other things. To V0, struct 2 again. Let's just go that, see if we can see. Let's call VVV. Not very interesting. V0, V0, field 4 plus 4 times 5. That at some point this pointer to a V table is changed to something else, so it's another V table at this point. And that is during the heap process. Yeah, so it cleans the virtual table afterwards. It's quite interesting. Right. It's kind of sad we didn't see any use of it. But alright, let's continue here. We simply have to create new variables, 0x28. Sad thing about this is basically just a lot of work for. It doesn't feel like you get so much until you have everything. That is. It's the way working with structures is. Struct 4. See, it automatically named it as struct 4, even though it's no struct 3, but this one is named struct 3 for IDA. V6, a lot of fields are being pushed, there's a lot of variables being pushed into things here. 7, D word, where is this D word set? So this is definitely some. This is what? It's only used here. It's kind of weird, isn't it? Anyway, let's continue. A heap. So we can heap allocated stuff. E status. The operation new. V6 is the operator new, V7 has the same structure, V8 is the result of this plus 15, 15 is 0, plus equals 52. It's interesting, so this data is apparently treated something. This one is some XOR, some plus, so this is some sort of decoder, right? Okay, we should probably just run it to this point. We can do it manually if it takes so long. Let's see what happens here. 6, 0, 8, 3, 6, 8. Let's see what that might be. V8. Jump 2. So, if you go here, you can press A just to create ASCII, but this is Unicode. You can't press A like you can press DD and R and H in either to change between integers and D words and quad words, etc. You can't do that with strings yet. We have requested it, so it might come at some point, but you can see this one's the name of the output file, which is kind of cool, isn't it? So we know that this, at this address, you can see all the jumps, is the decoded name of the output file. So V8 calls the name of the output file. So if field is set, then clean, it's set to 0. So this is not run, doesn't free it. Field, so we see file name. Some sort of file name has been put into this one because this one has been put here. Can do the same with this one, quick and easy. Bam. 11, locals, V11, jump 2. We have local blah blah blah, app data or something like that. Ugh. Local app data. Right. So that's local app data. Do that. Write that here as well. And here as well. I did not have an prepended name here now because I'm lazy. Let's see. At this point, we do have some U5 equals 0. U5 equals 0. Is V5 ever? Yeah, it is increased for the status. Well, the status, alright, so this one is a max thing, and the E status, so it's not a status, it's E I max, like that. The counter max. Alright, so here we do have two. Two D words and another function pointer to something that is 0 at this point. Right, so we go, just continue down. Now I see that the app data string has been put into here. Have the structure of app data and file name there. Very nice to have. Can go continue there. If you want to see what's in 24, it's very difficult here, but you can go to the variable, press the arrow, and you will then you can jump to where that is pointed at. So 54 in this case, which is what we saw here. So the first D word was 54, the second is 50, and the third is an offset. Or is it an offset? It might be one, and it might not one. It might be a D word that is the same value of an offset as well. Continue doing this, blah blah blah. This is kind of curious, all these things not that interesting for now. What is interesting for us is the reason why this is IMAX 2, because we did as you run it dynamically and looked at the file changes in the system as you did, you would see that file appearing in app data. So you saw that one file. So what is the reason for having a 2 when we have identified one file already? So let's see what happens at this point. Is it still the same file name or is it something different? Go to this one here now. And bam, it's called bulletin.doc. So if you remember correctly, the first document we started with before even all the flash stuff was bulletin.doc. And that is quite cool. So now we know that this is just a file name. And can go down here, see if the local app data is still the same folder. Might be that. I didn't rename this one, local app data, same one as well. So this is typically how this looks in a assembly view. Pushing the, you can very much look for this one. It's not pleasant, there's no reason to look in this. Really wish you had the real one. Alright, so now we know that there are two files. And they are, first, they are added into, apparently you can see 52, there's some space between where things are stored. Here is the XOR routine for the decoder of file names. Alright, let's see if it returns 0 when that is done. So basically, as you saw here, it rewrote the areas of which that code was stored. So you have the Unicode here. It's not Unicode because it's like quad code or something like that, because it has lots of zeros. Let's see if that works. White has got 4 bytes. No, it doesn't work. That's pretty sad. Doesn't work. Well, you can read manually. Bulletin.doc, blah blah blah. Local app data. So that didn't. It doesn't need to return any value because it rewrote those areas. So let's just go all the way to the bottom here. It returns 1 when it succeeds. 0 when it does not succeed. Alright, so at least now we know that this is decode 2 file names. That's pretty nice. Didn't see it use this one. Kind of sad. Very sad actually. Why didn't you use that one? It's tremendously sad. Really wanted to use that one, but all right, it's not using it at this current time. Right, we have here basically the same thing as you saw, the decoder, a different key, some data, yet a different key. No, yet some different data, decodes, the value from that, apparently it happens to be a key. It's not that interesting, is it? It frees at the end, so we call it MV3 stuff. And here we do have some more interesting stuff. Let's see, the V0, if you go into a function, will analyze everything once you open a file, but the first time you go into the function, it will reanalyze the stack to try and interpret the prototype and the arguments of that function. So it just entering all the function at the first time will probably change the code as it looks to you the first time. So here we got the extra 0, which is interesting. So this call, if I remember correctly, this was structure 4, structure 2. All right, so I wrote wrongly. Struct 2. Let's see. So structure 2 is this. Is it used anywhere else? Heap allocated stuff. V18, apparently here we do have a virtual pointer, so that is good. That is very good for us, because then I can show you virtual pointers. Get proc address, this is the very typical way of creating pointers. The proc name, so here we have a proc name being decoded. Let's see in this one first. We also had this call here, struct 2, heap allocated, stuff, create file, write file, blah, blah, blah. So here's probably the writing of the file. So you can intercept this function by using a F2 here, seeing when it write files, blah, 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 or if it fails. Here we have the create process thingy. So, all right, start a process. Always important. Here we have mb create files. This one is sem pointers. I know not at this point, but it happens before those. While v2 equals something. V2 is imax, so it does this for, so not create files, but create file. First time it would create the drop file that you saw, and the second time it will create the bulletin doc as we saw in the previous function. Let's go into this one just to see the proc name here. Alright. So again, we could use this one if we really wanted to. Very simple one. In a report, this is something you really, really want to have in a report. You do want to have as many manual decoders as possible, because you can create extractors from them, and extractors are extremely valuable because they save you so much time at work. So if you get samples in, you can just run the extractor, see if it works. If it works, you can quickly classify it. Alright, this is the C2, this is the capabilities, because I've analyzed it before, the extractor worked. If it doesn't work, you might be able to tweak it, or it might be a different malware altogether. Alright, so we have come here. The proc name is RTL get compression workspace. So that is rather long, so I'm going to copy that, go to the locals again, go to the proc name. I don't know why that happens, it's so weird. Locals. You can see it here very neatly. Alright, it was an offset to that one. I just pressed D a couple of times to. I'm not gonna have that up there. Right, then we have to search for the prototype here. Or the entire definition, really, because you will really want to know what is in this place. So it's an enter status. You simply copy this thing out. You could write your own module to handle these, but again, the creation of the prototype in a virtual pointer, you have to do it like this. When you do a virtual pointer, you have to have the parentheses, the name, and these have to be defined in the header file. If they are not, you can define them yourself. That can be a lot of work, but if they are defined, you can simply just write them that P can be used instead of a star. Alright, so we go down here. We know that this one is... Alright, let's have that first. We know that the name of that one is... That is the name, so we can quickly identify these things. L3, so the stack is correct at this point. Often it is wrong, so often you have to do this just to get the correct stack. And sometimes new calls or new code pops up. Have to press Y to redefine it. Now it's redefined. You see the parentheses have disappeared. If they haven't, you can right-click and click False Call Type. If the stack is wrong, the arguments are... the number of arguments is different from what is the definition is, you will be able to press false call type, and then you will get perfect like this. So now we've found some hidden code. Let's see, do the same for the V18. Get V33, it's down there. Right, let's just continue down there then. V33. Jump 2. Was it that? It should be there. Shouldn't V23 be that one? Let's see. 2023. Well, that's bad. All right, maybe I haven't run it yet. Yeah, I hadn't run it yet. Sometimes the IEP and the EIP and the X-rays is showing you the wrong line, because it doesn't always have to, it moves one on one here, but it does, doesn't always align correctly here. So now we got it. See, again, a pointer. Going to this, create a pointer, decompress buffer. Do the same thing, rename it to decompress buffer, search for decompress buffer, a lot of, right, that was not nice, Google for it, RTL decompress buffer, some of the function that you find in this way aren't defined somewhere, so you have to go through undocumented databases to find them. And those can be a pain, especially if they aren't to be found in any undocumented. Do this again, defining the virtual pointer. All of these are fine. Oh, sorry, it's, I wish this one was in a different window. Yes?
It seems like you're copying a lot of standard setups that are available from Microsoft. Is there a tool or a function that will import this automatically to IDEPO?
Ah, please write one. Yeah, we really want it. We use a lot of time on this. So.
Yeah, I see that. It sounds unnecessary. But
yeah.
It's all standardized. And
I know. I do not have such a tool at the moment. I have asked somebody if they have a list of them. Because if you basically parse the entire MSDN, you could get a lot of them. You have to remove the in-out, the in-opt, the out, the prefixes on the variables. You have to remove the WinRAR API prefix. You have to remove those things that IDA does not understand. But you could create a header file with all of this information in it, so you don't have to go to MSDN and copy all of this.
Sounds but like something IDA should do.
IDA should do it, but they are a small team of like 10 people. And yeah, it is very neatly. You can't even copy in it vanilla like this. You will get wrong. It, yeah. So if you write one, please share it. Everybody will love you if you write one that simply just downloads every single function from MSDN and make them IDA compatible. That would be fantastic. But as you see, when we define this one, a lot of the variables auto-name themselves. That can be very nice, right? So now we know that this is some decompression routine. So, and that decompression routine. All right. This, if there's going to be another break, this is a good point of making another break. Is there a 10 o'clock break?
10 o'clock, 15 minute break.
All right.